connected to. The point is that we're all thinking forward. You know, last week I shared that a shark never swims backward. We're always thinking forward, which we should be. And we're making changes. We're making plans. And that's great. And that's why I wanted to spend some time thinking about Nehemiah. You know, many times we think that the challenges that we have in life, you know, whether we're the first ones to ever deal with this, or if something new comes along, well, we're the first, you know, chapter in humanity that's ever come up with this. Well, Ecclesiastes tells us that there's nothing new under the sun. This is challenging for us. It's not the first time that humans have had to deal with a challenge. It's not the first time worldwide, regionally, or in our country. So we can get through this and get through this together. In the spirit of church safety, and I'm talking about since we've had to basically kind of reboot a little bit with our schedules and stuff like that, in the spirit of church safety or health safety, we've had to limit some gatherings, adjust to digital services, cancel some in-person activities, and it's impacted our work and our growth. It is what it is. But we can find ways to work through that. I'm thankful to look out. This is one of the bigger crowds that I've seen since I've been coming to 8:30. We were coming to 10:30 for a little while, and the 1 o'clock, and now 8:30. This is super encouraging. This is not the end. This is just the beginning. I'm looking forward to upcoming days and the future. How many times have, and I've said this about myself the last few months, that this challenge, this pandemic, has affected my faith? It has. It's affected my faith. It's affected yours, I'm sure. I've heard that said of people who are much younger than me, and I've heard it said of people in their 70s and 80s that this is affecting my faith. I think I've heard it said we're all in the same water, we're just in a different boat. All of us have had our faith challenged some point in our life, and we've had our faith challenged right now. But we must never lose sight of the mission. If you go to Matthew chapter 28, verses 16 through 20, that's where we'll begin our time. Matthew 28, verses 16 through 20. That we should even do, in the spite of challenges, in the spite of looking to refocus and rebuild and restructure a little bit of our strategy of how we present the gospel to the world, we should never lose focus of the gospel or the good news or our mission. Matthew chapter 28, verses 16 through 20 says, "Then the 11 disciples went away into Galilee to the mountain which Jesus had appointed for them. When they saw him, they worshipped him, but some doubted, and Jesus came and spoke to them, saying, 'All authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Go, therefore, and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all things I have commanded you. And lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age.'" Jesus is always with us. As we point forward towards a new normal, let us not lose focus of the Great Commission. I'm so excited for us to get back together, but I want to be honest with you. I hope we don't stay here. I really don't. I hope that we get outside these walls and we get back into our communities, and I hope that we get back to sharing the good news of Jesus Christ, and I hope we don't stay in Glasgow. I hope we don't stay in Barron County. I hope that we can restart some mission efforts outside of the U.S. This spring, I had plans for us, my home, for us to maybe look at doing some international mission stuff with Latin American missions. I sent Jack's son, a message the other night, and I said, "Hey, what's the plan for Latin American missions? You know, I'd really like for us to, for me and my kids to do this possibly." He says, "Well, right now, all the borders of all the countries we went to are shut down. That's out of our control right now." What is in our control is we can still grow spiritually. We can grow together. We can grow evangelistically, and we make plans to reassemble, to recongregate, but also I hope we don't lose the focus on, and we just need to refocus. Aubrey Johnson, in his book entitled The Barnabas Factor, Realize Your Encouragement Potential, he says, "We must put our classroom knowledge to the test. We must begin practicing the proven principles of encouragement in our homes, churches, neighborhoods, and businesses. It must be every day, not just Sunday." Now, I don't know how many Bible classes that you've been a part of. I don't know how many lessons you've presented. I don't know how many sermons that you've heard. But now is an opportunity for the rubber to hit the road. You know, we've all sat in tons and tons of classes. We've all taught some classes probably. We've participated in mission efforts. Now it's time for us to use that knowledge that we've gained and we've learned and to use it during this challenging time. we have spent our lives preparing for this day, really, for this time, I think, to find ways to work through some roadblocks. So I'm hoping that we can use our knowledge as we look towards Nehemiah and look at his example and look at the things that he did and use what we have, the resources that we've gathered, and put it into practice. As it relates to what we've been challenged to in the last few months, I will just give you these three points. We can do really one of three things each and every day. We can give in, give up, or we can give it all we got. Hopefully, we're going to give it all we've got. As we seek to refocus our mission, rebuild the wall metaphorically for us, so to speak, we must have courage and not complaint. We must have confidence and not conflict. D.H. Lawrence said, "The great virtue in life is real courage that knows how to face the facts and live beyond them." We know what the facts are. We know what the challenges are. We know what we've been through. But it's time for us to live beyond what we've been presented with. With all that being said, I'd like to provide just a real quick summary. Let me pull my slide up here. Just a real quick summary of Nehemiah as we begin. The books of Ezra and Nehemiah go together. They join together. If you've ever been a part of woodworking or anything, you think about dovetail as a dovetail joint. They dovetail that, and they're working together because they're telling the same story, one story. They both fill a piece of Israel's history for about a thousand years before Jesus. This section of history tells us what? It tells us the first king of Israel, Saul, followed by David, and then followed by his son Solomon, the wisest man to ever live. The kingdom was called the United Kingdom. It was split into two kingdoms, the northern kingdom being Israel, southern kingdom being Judah. And neither kingdom was totally faithful, history tells us. In fact, Israel was probably the least faithful. They were sent off to Assyrian captivity around 722. 100 years later, 606 BC, Judah was punished with Babylonian captivity under King Nebuchadnezzar. Judah, while being in Babylonian captivity, was overtaken by the Persians. Okay, so now the Persians had to deal with the Babylonians, had to deal with the exiles, you might say. So, but they said, you can go back home, and they released them in three big waves. Ezra and Nehemiah tell the story of these three big waves to Jerusalem. Around 536 BC, their first wave returned under the leadership of Zerubbabel. And you can find that in Ezra chapter 1, verse 6. Second group returned under the leadership of Ezra around 458 B.C., and the third and final group returned under the leadership and direction of Nehemiah around 445. 70 years before Nehemiah returned, the temple had already been rebuilt. But all that time, the wall that King Nebuchadnezzar had destroyed was still laying in ruins. Something needed to be done. So Nehemiah, hearing about the walls needing to be repaired, was motivated to repair and to fix. You think about us in 2020. You think about, I always call it desire, time, and effort. Anytime you want to make a change, whether it's health, physical health, whether it's spiritual health, whatever it is, always think about you got to have three things. You got to have desire, time, and effort. Okay, Nehemiah, I actually could add a fourth, awareness. He had awareness. He had desire, and he was about to put in some time and make an effort. As a leader, the defining moment is to do what? Is to be able to formulate a plan, but also to assemble a team and get people to work together. He was able to do that. In Nehemiah chapter 6, verse 15, how long did it take to rebuild the wall? It took 52 days. He was able to do that. Zerubbabel oversaw the rebuilding of the temple. Ezra led a renewal of the respecting of the law, getting back to God's will. And Nehemiah oversaw the wall being built. I want you to think about, as you come back in 2 weeks for 8:30, we'll still be talking about Nehemiah, hopefully. I want you to think about these three big ideas, these three big works as they return to the Persian exile. We can learn so much about leading people to Jesus from Nehemiah as we seek to rebuild and refocus our time here in our little community. And in a few minutes, we're going to end with Nehemiah chapter 13. But as you pause for a second, leadership is one of my favorite things to study, to learn, to think about, to talk about, to look at examples. Outside of Jesus Christ, Nehemiah has probably been written about more when it comes to leadership principles. You think about all the books on leadership that businesses use, that corporations use, and hopefully many times Bible characters are used as some of those teaching points. Outside of Jesus, there's probably been more written about leadership when it comes to Nehemiah than anyone else outside of Jesus. in terms of leadership lessons. As you think about this time of transition that we're in, and it's okay to say we're in a little bit of a transition time, I want you to look for ways for us to become stronger, more united, and to seek to be the light in our community. If you go to Nehemiah chapter 1, verses 3 through 7, and as we go through this morning, I want you to think about what you can glean. I want you to think about, and I'll do a short summary at the very end, I want you to think about some things that you can extrapolate from Nehemiah. I want you to think about some things that you can apply to your life as you seek to strengthen yourself, myself, and our community and the church. First thing you're going to see that Nehemiah prays for his people. Nehemiah chapter 1, verses 3 through 7 says this, "And they said to me, 'The survivors who are left from the captivity in the province are there in great distress and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem is also broken down, and its gates are burned with fire.' So it was, when I heard these words, that I sat down and wept and mourned for many days. I was fasting and praying before the God of heaven. And I said, 'I pray, Lord God of heaven, O great and awesome God, you who keep your covenant and mercy with those who love you and observe your commandments, please let your ear be attentive and your eyes be open, that you may hear the prayer of your servant, which I pray before you now and night, day and night, for the children of Israel, your servants, and confess the sins of the children of Israel, which we have sinned against you. Both my father's house and I have sinned. We have acted very corruptly against you and have not kept your commandments, your servant, like you're commanded by your servant Moses.'" We see that Nehemiah was doing what? He was praying for his people. If you go back up just for just a few verses in verse 4, he says that when he heard these words, he sat down and wept. We're talking about construction, obviously, in a few minutes, and we're talking about building a wall, but he was concerned about them. Have you ever been so concerned about someone that you sat down and wept? You sit down and cry, that you've been so concerned about someone, that's showing great concern. That's showing great care. Most of you all, we've worked for different people. I've had a job for about 32 or 33 years, and I've worked for some really good people who really had that kind of concern. And you would almost run through, no pun intended, a wall for those people because they were concerned about you. Nehemiah is praying for his people. He's worried about the need to rebuild, but he's most concerned about what? He's most concerned about the sin problem that exists as well. So the application for us is we need to recognize sin and pray for God's help with the sin struggle in this world. If you go down to Nehemiah chapter 2, verses 1 through 5, Nehemiah chapter 2, verses 1 through 5, we see that Nehemiah is about to sacrifice. So far, we have that Nehemiah has prayed as a leader. Now, we're about to read a little bit of sacrifice. He's wanting to put in the time to repair the physical and the spiritual damage. Beginning in verse 1, "And it came to pass in the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of Artaxerxes, when wine was before him, that I took the wine and I gave it to the king. Now I had never been sad in his presence before. Therefore the king said to me, 'Why is your face sad, since you are not sick? This is nothing but sorrow of heart.' So I became dreadfully afraid and said to the king, 'May the king live forever. Why should my face not be sad when the city, the place of my father's tombs, lies waste and its gates are burned with fire?' Then the king said to me, 'What do you request?' So I prayed to the God of heaven and I said to the king, 'If it pleases the king and if your servant has found favor in your sight, I ask that you send me to Judah, to the city of my father's tombs, that I may rebuild it.'" You see, you think about the traits in chapter 1. If you've ever led anybody in any capacity, and that's within your home, if you've ever coached a sport, if you've ever led a mission trip, if you've ever conducted any type of meeting or any type of group organization, you realize the challenges that can lay before you. And I've learned over the years, it's been a process, still learning. I have a long way to go. But I've learned that when you care about people, they'll be more likely to listen to you. Another way that I say a lot, that people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Nehemiah cared for his people, and he was imploring the king basically for relief. He was wanting to go back, and he was wanting to help care for those that he loved and he cared about. We all want to be listened to, cared for, and reassured. You think about what's going on in our society right now, more and more division. And I've learned, too, just as you have, that people want, you know why people talk to you? Because they want you to make them feel better. That's why people talk to you. That's why I talk to other people. I want you to make me feel better. And we have an opportunity to listen, to show that concern, to show that we care about others. Do we see that people are distressed, confused, aggravated, frustrated, upset, vulnerable? Yeah, we do. We sure do. Nehemiah had a burden for people. This is the third point. He had a burden for people. Leaders should not develop a callousness towards people. We know that in the workplace, in the business place, and in the world, many times we might get caught up in the bottom line. We might get caught up in, well, it's just all business. It's just a workplace. But as a leader, as we're trying to rebuild and retool, refocus, and re-strategize, we need to let people know that we're not calloused. We care about people. We'll weep with you. We'll cry with you. We will ask questions about you because every single person is valuable. If you go to Luke 15, verses 1 through 7, Luke 15, verses 1 through 7, we see that Jesus teaches us that every single person is valuable. Beginning in verse 1, now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear Jesus, but the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." Then Jesus said them this parable beginning in verse 4. Suppose one of you had 100 sheep and loses one of them. Doesn't he leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it? And when he finds it, he joyfully puts it on his shoulders and goes home. Then he calls his friends and neighbors together and says, "Rejoice with me. I have found my lost sheep." I tell you that in the same way there will be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who do not need to repent. What is the lesson for us is that every single person that we come in contact with is important, is valuable, is worth our time, is worth our conversation. We got to be willing to care for people that we're leading, be willing to care for people that we're trying to, as we lead them to Jesus, let them know that we do care about them. Nehemiah was concerned for safety. During this time that I learned through my research that if a city did not have walls, it was vulnerable. It was vulnerable to attacks. It was vulnerable to the outside. We must make sure that those that we're working with, those that we care, even within our church and even within our community, make sure that they're having their basic needs met. While Nehemiah predated an American psychologist named Abraham Maslow, I don't know if Maslow ever read Nehemiah. I'm not sure. If you've ever gone to school and we work with any in any human service field or anything like that, chances are, if you've had to take a psychology class, you've encountered Abraham Maslow. He, in 1943, he'd published a paper called A Theory of Human Motivation. And I'm just going to talk about the first parts of his paper, not all five. But he says, basically, that in order for humans to be able to function, in order for humans, for us as beings to be able to get around in life and to be successful, we've got to have our five basic needs met. Okay, the first one is the physiological need: food, water, warmth, and rest. And I think about Nehemiah. He was concerned about the security of the wall. I can't help but wonder and ask myself that he probably was also concerned about food, water, rest. Those he cares about. The second one that Maslow identifies, the second one is safety, security and safety. And I think about Nehemiah on the front end of Maslow, that Nehemiah had that same mindset. What about us as the church? We have an opportunity, I think about, in our community. Food insecurity is real. We have tons and tons of people in our community who may only get one meal a day, may only get two. One of the big reasons I'm excited to get back to school is so that we can start feeding kids again. A lot of times that the only meal a lot of kids get is at school. A lot of times the only two meals a child will get is at school. There are lots of people dealing with just the basic needs of not having food in our community. You think about our economy as it continues to be challenged. Lots of folks are in need of having their basic needs met. And while that is challenging, we have an opportunity as the church to find ways to help those who are dealing with those needs. While we're not building a wall around our city, we can build safety and security for those who are seeking to find that comfort and that security. When we have concern for others, we also have an opportunity to share Christ. When we're making sure their basic needs are being met. If you look at Nehemiah chapter 1, verses 6 through 7, it reminds us that Nehemiah was concerned about sin. So was Zerubbabel, so was Ezra. Nehemiah chapter 1, verses 8 and 9, he's concerned about their shepherding. Okay, you think about shepherds or sheep without a shepherd. If you go to Matthew chapter 9, verses 35 through 38, what can we learn from Nehemiah? We can learn that I've already identified some people in our society, and it may be us. Maybe we're vulnerable, we're distressed, we're confused. We have an opportunity to point them to the great shepherd, the ultimate shepherd, Jesus. Matthew chapter 9, verses 35 through 38 says, Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom and healing every disease and sickness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his field." Nehemiah was concerned about, you might say, the three S's: shepherding, sin, and safety. What does that mean for us moving forward? That means that we have an opportunity to, as we rebuild, as we find ways to get outside these walls, once we reassemble and kind of re-strategize in a safe way, that we can help others with safety. We can talk to others about sin. And we can also help them with shepherding as well. The next point I want you to think about Nehemiah as a leader, he gave of himself. We're going to read beginning in Nehemiah chapter 1, verses 8 through 11. Nehemiah chapter 1, verses 8 through 11. Think about giving of yourselves. Many times, and I like sports analogies, and over the years, some of my favorite coaches have been fired. I know that that's probably happened to some of your favorite coaches too. But what got some of the coaches is they had the mindset that they were bigger than the program. You know, they'd had some success, and I don't have to do what this school says or what this professional organization says. And they kind of stopped giving of themselves, and that's when we have problems. Here is just the opposite. Nehemiah, we're going to read about the job that he had. You know, you think about all of us, whatever job that you have, I don't know. I hope you're happy in your job. But you think about the spot that you have, maybe the status that you have within your job, and you think about giving that up. You know, would we give it up as Nehemiah does? Beginning in Nehemiah chapter 1, verses 8 through 11. "Remember, I pray the word that you commanded your servant Moses, saying, 'If you are faithful, I will scatter you among the nations. But if you return to me and keep my commandments and do them, though some of you were cast out to the farthest parts of the heavens, yet I will gather them from there and bring them to the place which I have chosen as a dwelling for my name. Now these are your servants and your people whom you have redeemed by your great power and by your strong hand, O Lord. I pray, please let your name be attentive to the prayer of your servant and to the prayer of your servants who desire to fear your name. And let your servant prosper this day, I pray, and grant him mercy in the sight of this man, for I was the king's cupbearer." As he's making his request, as he is asking the king to grant him the opportunity to leave, in a very humble and a very loving and a very sweet way, at the end he says, "For I was the king's cupbearer." And you think about, when I think about a cupbearer, first thing comes to my mind, I think of someone who was a servant. I think of servant leadership. But Nehemiah is about to make a big sacrifice. At the end of chapter 1, he talks about being a cupbearer. Well, through some research, what does a king's cupbearer do? Well, a cupbearer, and this is Nehemiah's job. I kind of maybe put that in light of what jobs we have or what jobs we think we want in our society. But Nehemiah had a pretty good setup. He had an important job. He understood the sacrifice. He understood what it meant to have a high position. Part of his job as a cupbearer is he would choose and taste and drink the food and drink before the king ate and drank. Why? Because he wanted to make sure it was safe and nobody was trying to poison him. He was very trusted. Cupbearer, usually handsome, well-trained, demonstrated etiquette, compassion, listened, offered counsel, enjoyed a super close access to the king. He was very trusted. The cupbearer also, one scholar I read, he says that in charge of the royal signet, he also was in charge of the administration of accounts, probably had access to funds, administration of money. Nehemiah lived in the palace. If you look at Nehemiah chapter 1:1, the second part of that verse, he says, I was in Shushan, the citadel. Excavations have showed that the palace was comprised of cedar, gold, ivory, walls decorated with tremendous art. Nehemiah, that's where he lived. He had the best clothes, very comfortable quarters, had a very premium job, you might say. I'd say his name was on the letterhead somewhere at the very top, more than likely. But yet, he was about to give all of that up. Because why? Because great leaders do what? Great leaders sacrifice. The church sacrifices for the greater good. Nehemiah also willing to overcome obstacles. We must be willing to overcome some obstacles to reach out and to share others, share the good news with others. Some of these obstacles may take the form of critics, people who want to stand in the way of building or rebuilding. If you go to Nehemiah chapter 4, verses 1 through 4. We're going to read where the walls defended against enemies. And we're talking about, you might say, people who are going against the grain a little bit. Nehemiah chapter 4, verses 1 through 4. In addition to sacrificing, giving all of that up, as Nehemiah is seeking to rebuild, he's also has to deal with some infighting. That's not fun. It's not fun at all. Beginning of chapter 1. But so what happened when Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall, he was furious and very indignant and mocked the Jews. And he spoke before his brethren and the army of Samaria and said, what are these feeble Jews doing? Will they fortify themselves? Will they offer sacrifices? Will they complete it in a day? Will they revive the stones from the heaps of rubbish, stones that are burned? Now Tobiah the Ammonite was beside him, and he said, whatever they build, even if a fox goes up on it, he will break down their stone wall. In verse 4, hear, O our God, for we are despised. Turn their reproach on their heads and give them as plunder for to a land of captivity. We see that Nehemiah was willing to do something that had not been done for a very long time, but he had to do it also after overcoming some other obstacles, walking away from his professional job, you might say. Now he's got to deal with some naysayers and enemies he's trying to do the right thing. They put it together in 52 days, but it laid in ruins for about 140 years. Why hadn't someone had the same concern as Nehemiah to get it done? Well, I look at myself sometimes. Why are some things not getting done that I need to maybe focus more on? I go back to maybe my awareness. Am I aware as I need to be when it comes to the work of the church? You think about obstacles, having to do things sometimes we think they're easy, but really not. And when things get kind of hard or challenging, sometimes it's kind of hard to stick around sometimes. Nehemiah, you think about overcoming naysayers and enemies. In Nehemiah 4, he had to do half of doing something well was fighting the gnats and the mosquitoes that bug you. You think about the enemies. Well, were the enemies clapping hands and encouraging them? Hey, you can do it. No, they were not. It was just the opposite. They were discouraging them. Half of the workers had to stand watch while the other half of the workers could work on the wall. Can you imagine that? Yesterday at home, it was nice and warm outside. I like it good and hot. We were able to do some mowing and weed eating outside. And on a good day, that's a challenge. I can't imagine having to deal with people as I'm trying to do a little weed eating or I'm out there burning up in the sun. I can't imagine people, you know, yelling and screaming at me and mocking me as we're trying to work. I can't imagine that. But yet he did that in the face of all trying to do what was right. Nehemiah overcame selfishness. When you walk away as the cupbearer, he overcame selfishness. He got people to work side by side. He got people from different mindsets, different ideas to work together and be united. I've learned that it takes everyone to be number one. Whether it's a sport, whether it's band, whether it's your job, whether it's the church, it takes everyone. It takes everybody working together. And Nehemiah was able to find people who possessed different qualities but still worked together. Nehemiah chapter 6, verses 15, 52 days to build the wall. They found a way to work together through the challenges. Now, if you go ahead and go to Nehemiah chapter 13, verses 30 through 31. Nehemiah chapter 13, verses 30 through 31. We know that the book of Nehemiah is inspired. We know that it is inspired by God. But I can't help but think that if this book was written by a man, it probably would have stopped in chapter 12. Because chapter 12, everything, they got everything back the way that it should be. But we see what happens in 13. Nehemiah goes to Persia, goes back to Persia. He returns to the work that was completed, and he sees that people become complacent. They defied the law, stopped working, began to grumble. I've heard it said that those who grumble often stumble. And if you go to verses 30 through 31, it's almost as if Nehemiah is saying, God, we tried. I tried, and I fell short, but we tried. Verse 30, thus I cleansed them of everything pagan. I also assigned duties to the priest and to the Levites, each to his service, and to bringing the wood offering and the first fruits at appointed times. And he said, remember me, O my God, for good, that I tried. I tried to do what was right. I tried to do what was good. We know that Nehemiah realizes what? That he could not save people alone. All throughout the Old Testament is pointing towards what? A Messiah. We need to look for Jesus today. We need to lead others to him. What do you think about Nehemiah cares for people and he prays for people? You think about church versus self, or church in addition to self. You think about the last few months that we've all become a little frustrated, maybe a little edgy due to the slowdown, due to the, I don't want to say a shutdown, but the slowdown in our country. We've had our faith challenged. We've had challenges that have come our way that we really did not want to have to deal with. But yet, what can we learn from Nehemiah? Well, we can learn that we can pray. That's what we need. That's where we need to start. We can care for others. We see that we can be a comfort to others. We see that we can be present to others. We see that we can demonstrate compassion. We see that we can demonstrate our love for others to overcome obstacles. And we also understand that we're not in this alone. We're not in this alone as individuals. We have one another as the church, that we should lean on one another during difficult times as we seek to plan towards the future, build towards the future. We realize that we also need Jesus Christ. We also realize that our faith will triumph in trouble. If you go to Romans chapter 5, verses 1 through 5, Romans chapter 5, verses 1 through 5. Therefore, having been justified by faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ, through whom also we have access by faith into this grace in which we stand and rejoice in the hope of the glory of God. And not only that, but we also glory in tribulations, knowing that tribulations produces perseverance, and perseverance, character, and character, hope. Now, hope does not disappoint, because the love of God has been poured out in our hearts by the Holy Spirit who was given to us. And I want you to think, as we point towards the future, as we point towards tomorrow, as we point towards next week, as we point towards the remainder of 2020, nobody really knows what direction things will go. It's kind of like forecasting the weather, really. Nobody can really do that just 100% accurately. During uncertain times, we can count on the certainty of Scripture. We can count on the certainty of the church. I hope that you realize that as we continue to move forward, that we're doing so in a safe way, and we have to never lose sight of our mission. We'll end where we began, Matthew chapter 28, verse 20. You think about the words of Jesus. He says, I am always with you. What about us? Now, for the remainder of July, we're going to talk about rebuilding, kind of retooling a little bit. But what about us? Do we need to be rebuilt? What challenges have we dealt with? Would we like to improve? Would we like to be strengthened? Do we need to sacrifice more? Do we need to show more concern for others? Do we need to demonstrate more self-care? Maybe that life's been hard on all of us. We want you to know, as South Green Street Church of Christ, we love each and every one of you. We want to do everything that we can to help you. And our invitation is a little different, but the invitation is still available. And there should be a number, I think, posted here just in a second. If you would like to respond, Leland Glass's cell number is there. If you would like to speak with Leland, or if you need help, he would love to talk with you, and we'll do anything that we can to help you.